you'll find around, so come on in and join us tonight on Open Mind. And that window between physical life and spiritual life is found in, in the physical presence of one Thomas Jacobson, who is our guest tonight. Thomas, welcome to Open Mind. So glad to have you aboard.
Hi, Bill. Well, it's great to be back. I'm looking forward to it.
Hit the red button over there. I can tell. There you go. Say it again.
Hello, Bill.
There you go.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
All right. Thomas is a transmedium, and for those of you who don't know what a transmedium is, I think it would probably be better for it to be explained by Thomas.
Okay. Mediumship is a term that I like to interchange with channeling, because channeling infers perhaps a little more of creativity, and that helps people understand, I think, how they are a medium, how they channel. And I like to encourage everyone to begin to contemplate how they are already channeling, regardless of your belief system or your doubt or your skepticism. And what I went through, it was basically surrendering to natural communication deep inside myself, which means allowing myself to become more sensitive and much more receptive, and it was definitely the most difficult thing I've ever done. I'm still doing it, of course. Mediumship is someone who's in the middle between two or more points of view, and offers themselves as a channel for those varied points of view to make contact from one person to another, or from one reality to another reality. And of course, the job of a medium is to build and maintain an exceptional degree of objectivity. Now, one thing that I think some people take from that is that that means that the medium or the act of mediumship is not creative. And so I like to emphasize that the act of mediumship for you, for everyone, for myself, is highly creative. And that's the state of art and creativity and invention that we've all seen.
Well, I'd love for you to get into that, because I am persuaded, and this has taken a long time for me to understand channeling and mediumship. I think that everybody does it.
Right.
You do it every day.
Yes.
I was talking to a dear friend of mine, who's an attorney friend of mine. In fact, he and I are doing a lot of client relationships these days. And I'm reading some of the things that he wrote about the particular matter that we're dealing with. And they were just beautiful. And he was looking to me, and I said, Andy, you're a magnificent writer. You know, where did you come up with all of this? He says, you won't believe it. And I said, try me. He says, I just sit down and these thoughts come into my mind. They are things that I never heard of. Quite often on the floor in a courtroom, he says, I just know that if I open my mind, that these things are going to be said that he didn't think about.
Right.
That are very much on target. He is very, very successful. I says, Andy, you're channeling.
Right. Exactly.
And then I had to explain to him what channeling was.
Right. The experience of channeling is so natural that it's like breathing. So it's something we really haven't thought about. And what happens is that all of us get pictures in our mind all the time. All of us get these thoughts, just like the lawyer, that come into us out of nowhere. However, we have a very deeply ingrained habit, it seems, of priding ourselves on our ability to discern, our ability to judge, and so most of what comes in we toss out. And each and every minute of the day, we have this flow of pictures and thoughts coming in, and what we do out of our fear of failure and errors or being naive or silly is we reject probably 99% of it.
Well, I think we probably have to put a little ego there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the hard part of the reason that the idea of channeling can be very effective and practical for people is to invite themselves to really surrender to the thoughts that come into their mind and let them come out, externalize them outside through writing or talking or whatever before they judge it, and quit trying to decide what's right and wrong before it's even brought to the outside world.
Well, let me stop both of us here for just a second. Let's assume that there are people who've tuned in with us tonight on Open Mind that have never been here before. And we're talking about channeling as if it's something that everybody should know. But if you're from Central Texas, you may think channeling is going out there fishing for catfish.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about. Channeling is, correct me if I'm wrong, receiving information which is beyond your consciousness.
Correct. I agree.
And it manifests itself in many different ways. Whether it is writing or just thought processes, or in your case, you're a trans-channeled.
Right.
And you will, for the audience, you'll be able to experience that with Thomas tonight, where he will go into trance. Let's describe that for again.
Okay.
You're just going to kind of go away.
Right.
And if the audience could sit here and watch you, you're going to look funny.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Because your configuration
better.
No. With all due respect to Dr. Peoples, no, you don't look better. But you have now gone, and you've gone into an altered state of consciousness.
Right.
And at this point in time, then another consciousness is going to occupy your being for a while, as far as we're concerned.
Right.
Now, he's going to twist your face up a little bit.
Right.
But he is also going to be able to say some things that are quite unusual. He will talk much different from you do. Now, when you've had this checked before, your physiology changes when this happens.
Right.
Your EKG changes.
That's correct.
Your changes.
Yes. It slows down quite a bit, just as Dr. Peoples comes in, and it takes on a very, very even rhythm, as if in deep sleep, although it is distinctive from deep sleep. It's something fairly unusual.
Well, we've, of course, had, this is, I don't know how many times you've been on. You're one of the more popular things that happens on Open Mind. But I want to prep the audience as to, you know,
right,
what's happening. Thomas will go into trance a little bit later, and Dr. Peoples will present himself. Now, when Dr. Peoples presents himself, he takes over Thomas's own physiology. He has his own way of doing things. I lose control of the show when Dr. Peoples is here. I really do. But we love him. He will give us a metaphysical preamble of some kind. Have you talked to him about shortening
that? Yes. He's heard us over and over again, but I doubt he'll do any good.
He's going to say those things, and they always are very rich, and they're very rewarding. A little background on Dr. Peoples, if you will.
Well, he presents himself as a gentleman, elderly in years, as a human being, and born in Scotland and raised in England, and lived most of his life in the United States, and was an author and traveled the world lecturing, which I didn't even realize, by the way, at the beginning.
Well, I didn't either, but we did some research on him after our first meeting, and sure enough, Dr. Peoples exists, and we even had a photograph of him.
Right. I had two or three different books sent to me that he'd written I didn't even know about, and he was talking about spirituality when he was in the body, which was a mild surprise to me.
Yeah, he was a clairvoyant.
And
quite renowned.
Yes.
In fact.
Yeah, he was lecturing when he was 100 years old around the world. So he comes through, and what I do is relax into a type of sleep, a trance, where I give him full permission to occupy me. And he comes through strongly and presents his point of view. Their desire is to share their philosophy. That's what they like to do. And then they answer questions and try to wrap that philosophy around the questions. But he's very sincere, and his desire is just to serve and to help people. He comes through. Every time I've gone into trance, he comes through for a moment. Sometimes he doesn't stay in, but he's usually there for quite a while. And I think everyone will find him very colorful, but I feel so lucky and blessed that he's coming through me, because I just love him a lot. He's quite something. He has quite a sense of humor.
Well, we all love
him. His philosophy is quite unique.
You know, your last appearance, and Dr. Peoples' last appearance, was one of the most uplifting, one of the warmest things that have happened on Open Mind, because he is humorous, but he is very real, and he gets right to the point of the matter with the person with whom he is talking. And what I have found is interesting, because you've gone into trance, you know, privately,
yes,
or in our own social group,
right,
rather than on the air. And he can be in a group of people, and he will talk to, say, Annette here, sitting here, and he's saying one thing to her, but to all of us that are listening, it's another thing.
Right.
Together. There are multi-levels in which he speaks.
Right, so everyone gets some meaning from it, usually.
Right. And this is true with the audience. You know, I'm listening, and it seems to be kind of very, very general, but I have had so many of the people that Dr. Peoples has talked to, and she'll call me, you know, during the following week, says, he was on target. He knew everything that was going on, and I'll go back and listen. And it was kind of general things he was saying, so there's a double-barreled shot happening.
Right? Yes, because what I've learned is he is trying to wrap that philosophy. He's trying to answer the question in a way that not only helps that person, but can be somewhat meaningful to anyone else listening, to help them learn to answer their own questions, so to speak.
What I would like to do here, I'm going to take a little break in just a second, all right, just in a moment or two, but I want to open up the phone lines for you to talk to Thomas Jacobson, who, before he goes and lets Dr. Peoples take over the radio station, which he will do, and find out and answer any questions you may have about mediumship and how he got into it, what he feels is the importance of it to you, which is very germane to why you're here with us tonight. I think it is something for you to explore and to open your mind to, that this is going on around us. You will hear, of course, an outstanding example of that tonight with Thomas and Dr. Peoples. Not all of us can do that. I think all of us could.
Absolutely, yes.
If we gave it an effort. Let me give you the numbers. They all end in talk. And let's get into that. I think it's important that you understand that goes on, and that you understand that it is indeed very much a part of your own life, because Keith Arari is here. We will have Dr. Peoples, I think, in November. He will be here live and doing all of his marvelous wonder things along with Thomas Jacobson. But we wanted to talk about something a little more where you're coming from, I think. And that is where we as human beings, all of us, are coming from. We are beginning to learn in this little, what we could call this, our own little symposium that goes on every Saturday night here. Has been going on for many, many years. We're learning a lot of different things. And one of the best voices, one of the best educators we have, are the men who wrote a book called The Mind Race. It's a must book for you. Go down to Alexandria, too. You know, just talking about them over there. Get your copy of it. It's written by Russell Targ and Keith Arari. And Keith is with us tonight. Keith, welcome. Welcome back to Open Mind. Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Now, Russell couldn't be here tonight, but you have a fill-in, which he'll work, I suppose. You want to introduce your friend to us here? And give us a little bit of his background.
Charles Targ is a professor of psychology at the University of California, Davis. And Charlie has been in this field for a very, very long time. Wrote the book Altered States of Consciousness. And how many other books have you written, Charlie?
Several.
Two, three, four, five, six.
Yes, and dozens and dozens of articles on psychic abilities and really helping us to understand our potential. And now he even has a newsletter on the subject.
I really do like the newsletter. I really love the title charge. Charles, where'd you get that title?
I just thought it up.
You just thought it up.
Yeah. It's picked it out of the air, as it were.
The Open Mind. I knew I liked you from the very beginning. You know, we were thinking together. Gentlemen, can human beings actually do all of this psychic thing that we talk about in the world of mysticism, bend metal, see at great distances, see into the future, see into the past, know things that they're not supposed to do? Is this a part of the human consciousness, really?
Well, if you throw all of that together, then you kind of have to answer them one at a time. human beings clearly have much greater potential than we thought that they had. For example, people can learn to accurately describe information at a distance. You can sit here in this studio, or your listeners can sit at home, and accurately tell what is going on in some other place. The next room, or someplace in China, someplace in some other part of the world. People can even describe hidden objects in locked boxes. You could describe what's going on in the Soviet Union in some place. People are also able to describe what will happen in the future, what hasn't happened yet. You ask a question about bending metal, and I can't answer that question because much, much more research has to be done to see whether that is a psychic effect or if that's some kind of unusual psychological effect or what's going on there. What we do know is that ordinary people can learn to use their psychic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
They can learn to do what we call remote viewing, which is this ability to describe distant locations or hidden objects or hidden information, even distant people, accurately.
Well, I find, you know, particularly with the, you know, the appearance of both of you here, that we have taken it now out of the realm of the metaphysicians talking, the lecturers lecturing that this can be done. You have been involved deeply in ongoing, rather significant research that is showing this that this can happen. And by significant research, you know, we're here in California. We kind of think Stanford University is a neat place. They work pretty good up there. They do a lot of good stuff. And you know the halls of Stanford rather well, don't you, Keith? Charles?
Well, Charlie and I were both at SRI, which was formerly Stanford Research Institute.
Right.
And is now called SRI International. It's a think tank. And we were there, in fact, working in psychic research.
You have a lot of people who have a lot going for them, that have a lot of very important things to do, and they were dealing with this subject. Does that lead us to believe that perhaps there's something to it?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt to it, Bill. I mean, sometimes people ask me if I believe in psychic stuff, and I tell them it's not a matter of belief. It's a matter of looking at the evidence and seeing what's real.
It's like saying, do you believe that Dallas is here? You know, if you don't, it goes away? No, it's here.
That's true. Actually, I've never been to Dallas, so I can't be 100% certain on that.
But I've been there.
There.
On
it. Oh, good. It is there.
Okay. It's there. In fact, it's interesting that people often talk about psychic abilities as a matter of belief. Oh, do you believe in that? And, well, do you believe the sun comes up?
Yeah, that's about it.
And you would say, well, that's not a matter of belief. The sun does come up, sort of. I mean, it looks like it's coming up. Well, people do have the ability to describe things psychically, to have psychic abilities. People can learn to develop that. The exciting thing is that we're not talking about special, unusual, weird people off in one corner someplace who are doing something psychic at SRI or anyplace else. I'm talking about your listeners. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about all of us. People can learn to develop their psychic abilities, and you don't have to join some cult, and you don't have to buy into some belief system. It's kind of like learning to play the piano.
Probably easier.
Probably easier, yeah.
Much easier, because we can do these so-called psychic things, or these weird things, and we probably, in a very benign way, are using them all the time anyway.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think that psychic ability, something like clairvoyance, is actually the mechanism by which mind and body connect with each other. You know, mind always seems like something different from your body and brain, but when people have tried to think about it, they say, well, if they're different, how does one work the other? And I think we have enough evidence for psychic function to say, what's its normal use? And I think its normal use, actually, is that it takes the part of us that we vaguely call mind, that's somehow different from matter, and it's the communication link. It's the mind somehow perceives what's going on in the brain and the nervous system through a kind of clairvoyance, and then somehow affects the nervous system and our body through a kind of psychokinesis. I think, actually, it's the things that you know at a distance or the like that are unusual uses of psychic ability. Normally you use it inside all the time. Once in a while you see it out there in the world, and that makes us notice it.
Well, what I love about the work that you're doing, and our good friend Russell couldn't be with us tonight also, is that we have taken it out of a realm. We've put it into the laboratory. We have examined it with the best kind of laboratory information that we can examine it. We have put it under the most rigorous kind of testing that we would expect the people in the medical profession to put on the virus that's causing cancer or AIDS or whatever. We're now dealing with this particular
thing. Medical research is real sloppy by the standards of parapsychological research. We have gone overboard on being rigor and airtight.
So but there has been rigorous research.
In fact, the rate of repeating experiments successfully in psi research, psychic research, called parapsychology, the rate of repeating experiments successfully is higher than in many simply broadly accepted psychology experiments that when you go to do them again don't really repeat that easily. You can check that out with a lot of undergraduate psychology students who try to repeat those experiments and they don't work as often as many experiments that we do all the time. For example, remote viewing. I was involved in an experiment a short time ago in which a woman in the Soviet Union was asked to describe where I would be in San Francisco 4 hours in her future, 10,000 miles away.
I want you to hold that story, because I have to describe something in the future of everyone.
Okay.
All right. But I'm glad you're getting into that, because as was outlined in your book, The Mind Race, that there is a lot more to psychic phenomena than looking into crystal balls, and it very well, and in fact is, tied in with the very defense of the American way of life. Back, I'm Bill. And we are talking about where we are. Can I be poetic there? Where we are, really, are psychic individuals. We're using our psychic abilities all of the time. In, well, some perhaps in more dramatic ways. But have you ever had that hunch that lets you do something? It's a hunch.
It's interesting how people use the word hunch. Mm-hmm. And they use the word gut feeling.
Really?
Men use that. Women say women's intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone says, oh, I was just lucky. Sometimes that is luck, but sometimes it's more than that. You might have a friend who somehow always finds a parking place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wherever it is, that friend is always just, you know, they know where to go and they're there. What is that? Are they just lucky? Are they somehow or other psychically homing in on that? We have a lot of sort of cultural jargon, words that we throw around for intuition. Intuition, ESP, hunches, gut feelings. But, in fact, psychic experiences are not just confined to the laboratory. They're widespread. And in traveling all over the world, I found that all kinds of people want to talk to me about what's happening to them. Once they find out that I will not think that they're going crazy just because they describe a psychic experience, a precognitive dream, for example. I started to tell you about this experiment between the Soviet Union and the United States, in which a Russian woman working with the USSR Academy of Sciences was asked to describe where I would be in San Francisco 4 hours in her future. 4 hours in her future, 10,000 miles away. She was in Moscow. I was in San Francisco. I did not know where I was going to go. We were completely out of touch with one another. She was being filmed by an independent American film crew and by the Academy of Sciences over there, while she did this remote viewing of trying to look into my future. She's, of course, never been to San Francisco. She hasn't been out of Russia, as far as I know.
Probably won't let her out if she has all that ability, come to think of it.
Well, it's a hard place to leave in general. But the woman described seeing me in a plaza in what she called a cupola, a curved building. She saw animal ears and animal eyes. She gave other good details. Animal ears, animal eyes, a cupola, in a plaza.
She knew about San Francisco.
She knew that it would be someplace in San Francisco, but, you know, how many places will fit that description? Now,
there's animal ears all over San Francisco,
right? Yeah, it sounds like San Francisco to me.
She even drew this profile of an animal's head with the ear and the eye, very specifically. It turned out that 3.5 hours later, I randomly chose a place out of a pool of possibilities that only I was aware of. Randomly chose a place so that even I did not know what was going to come up exactly. And exactly 4 hours later, I was sitting on the merry-go-round in the plaza at Pier 39 in San Francisco. And sitting right next to the horse's head with the animal ears and animal eyes. And, of course, the curved merry-go-round building. And this was a Russian woman who was really not that different from you or I.
Now, she had her vision of where you were going to be recorded 4 hours ahead of time.
Correct.
She had never been to San Francisco.
That's right. And
I didn't know that there was one of these little merry-go-rounds going around.
In fact, the merry-go-round had been recently moved out to the plaza. And I chose sites for my pool of locations that were not going to be popular, well-known. I did not choose the Golden Gate Bridge, for example, or Coin Tower, because everybody thinks of that. I chose places that would have unique characteristics, but that you wouldn't necessarily think of. And
well, in your book, The Mind Race, there's quite a dissertation you go through about this random selection.
Oh, it's important. In fact, I did not know what she had described. I was not in touch with her. I did not know when I chose the place at random, I did not know what her description was. Otherwise, I could just go find a place that fit that description. My task, should I decide to accept it, was just to be in a place at a certain time.
Good.
And that's what I did.
And went through your very careful, random, scientific procedure to get there.
That's right.
I was very impressed with the work that you and Russell did and how you were so very careful about there is no way that you were going to come up with some sort of a predetermined thing, a way that, oh, well, I know Keith pretty good. He's going to go down to this point, that point. You know, you had computers selecting it for you.
That's right.
Where they would do it.
I think that's really important, Bill, the way these random selections are done, this careful control, because, you know, there's an awful lot of reality subsumed under the word psychic. There's also an awful lot of nonsense that goes under the word psychic. And what I think is exciting in our time is that through research, we're beginning to understand what parts of the psychic are really real, that really reflect things that people can do, and what parts are sort of dreams or ideas or illusions that we could just as soon get by.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important to me as a human being, a person, who talks about this a great deal, to see the kind of research that you, Keith, and Russell, you, Charles, were involved in under the most strenuous kind of mantle of research, the kind of research that we would expect out of any phenomenon, whether it is medical, mental, science. You were applying those very same kind of disciplines in order to establish that this kind of ability does or does not exist.
I could disagree with you on that a little bit, Bill. In that,
who invited you here, Charles?
I'm not terribly interested in establishing that certain kinds of psychic things occur, because I think that's been established so many times.
Yeah, really. Really over.
I'm really interested in what works in the psychic things. What are different psychic abilities? And even more, what do they mean? What's it mean that our mind can sometimes reach out and touch somebody else's mind? What's it mean that we can sometimes look into the future? I mean, it's fascinating in and of itself, yeah, but the question of what it says about our human nature is the thing that really excites me as a psychologist, particularly now.
Well, even more importantly, Charles, how can we now put to this great ability that we have to work? We have seemingly refused to do it. But if you go back into our history, if you go back into our religions, even, go back to the Bible. Indeed, wasn't Jesus teaching us to use psychic ability? That was one of his prime teachings. By faith, you can move mountains. He was saying that by faith, you can unleash the power that is within you psychically.
Well, of course,
to do all kinds of things.
The church for a long time was suggesting that people stay away from this stuff, that it was of the devil, that this is bad material, you shouldn't look into your psychic abilities. And I was speaking with a friend in Italy, works with the Vatican there, a Roman Catholic theologian, who was describing how the church was possibly concerned about competition, prophecies like precognition, miracles like psychic abilities. And if this is happening,
I have some precognition.
All right.
Or otherwise, we're going to be in trouble. I am so involved in what you're saying and so delighted to have you here that I forget that we have to pause every now and then. and do these things, which are precognitive. Certainly, they have a lot of psychic sense to them. And they pay the bill.
Jason.
News time. We're on news. This is Open Mind Time. 11 minutes away from the 10 o'clock mark. With me is Keith Harari, Dr. Charles Tart, and we're talking about psychic phenomena, and we want to finish the thing with the Soviet Union, what they're doing over there.
Well, the Soviet Union, and I was in Russia addressing the Soviet Academy of Sciences on psychic research, and the Soviets take psychic research seriously at the highest levels of their government.
And very high of a budget within their...
A lot of money there going into the field. It's hard to estimate how much. I could tell that they wouldn't show everything. Obviously, they're not going to show everything. But there are some secret laboratories over there. They are pursuing the field very seriously. They are repeating the American experiments in remote viewing, not with special, unusual psychic people, but with psychology students. And they're getting excellent results on... able to learn to accurately, psychically describe what is happening in a distant location, where people are hiding.
Well, there is, you know, we've talked about this before, that they're able to discern a lot of things, for instance, psychically. And we can do it, too, and perhaps, hopefully, we're working on that.